Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Oz Gang Talks. We have part of the Australia crew here for Fifth Wrist, and we've decided to get together after a long time and have a bit of a chat, talk about watches, see what everyone's been up to, and really just probably get together and have a drink. Whether we needed to record or not was probably the second choice. But anyway, I've got Charith, T-San, Tom, and Vinny. So some nice, colourful characters here that can take us away with the...
Racial.
I did it, Vinny. I always say colourful. Even if it was just Rob and Alex, I used to call them colourful characters. So you know what I mean. Anyway, the fun part about tonight is I've got, circa six questions. And the guys don't know what the questions are, so they're going to have to think on their feet and just answer the questions. And we're just going to have a conversation, a bit of fun, talk about watches. So we'll start with wrist checks and drink checks. So why don't we go? Tom was first in the chat or in the recording. So Tom, what's on your wrist? What are you drinking?
Well, I'm drinking a
Matsu
ginger beer.
That's brilliant.
And I've got a G-Shock on my wrist, G-Shock DW5600TGA-9DR.
Is that the box holding up the mic?
Yeah, it's got it nicely written on the side, so I could just read that out perfectly.
Very good.
That's different to the Ben Clymer G-Shock, is that right, Tom?
Yeah, it's a bit louder color-wise than the Ben Clymer.
I think anything could be a bit louder than the G-Shock, could it?
Is there cashmere on the strap?
I was going to say, it's the G-Shock you wear with a knitted sweater, I reckon, or a cardigan.
It needed to come with a tweed strap.
Yeah, you can get them.
Yeah, I know. I'm just surprised he didn't, like, that's the second strap or it didn't come in the box.
Oh, that's funny.
Comes with a Cara. Anyway, I'll let that one go.
All right, T-San, what are you rocking?
I'm drinking a lovely whiskey that my eldest daughter bought for me for Christmas, or might have been for my birthday. Which was only before Christmas, and ginger ale and lime, which is very refreshing. And on my wrist, I've been changing my watches over every day, as I tend to do, but as I definitely do when I'm working now that I'm back at work. And so it's the 1970s Skipper, which is almost an Otavia, really. And it's an Otavia case, but I guess they just made a nautical version and called it the Skipper. But I love it, you know, reds, blues, whites, oranges, chronograph.
And it's a big watch too, right?
It is a big watch,
yeah. It's not a small watch.
No, and those only work, they generally only work on me when I wear a bracelet, because then the bracelet, which this is the original beads of rice bracelet, gives its own form on my puny little wrist. So, yeah.
So that is the original one?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
Beautiful. It's got that safety clasp so that it doesn't come off, and it's got Hoya written on the horizontal on the bracelet, and then all of the beads of rice in there. So, and with these ones, I don't muck with the bands because there's quite a bit to them, I think. So I just wear them on the smallest setting. Yeah.
That works. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Cool. Righto, Charith. I saw you opened a fresh bottle there.
Yeah, fresh bottle. I've got a Thompson Brothers. So I just got it. Just picked it up from Elysian whiskey shop in Melbourne.
Just picked it up, did you?
Yeah. Oh, like yesterday. Thompson Brothers is like a 2009 vintage. I just like the labeling. It's just really cool.
Where are they from? Sorry. Is it Australian?
It's Scottish. It's distilled at Turninich Distillery.
Nice.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with that.
No.
500 bottles. So yeah, which has just gone down very nicely. And I'm wearing the Fifth Wrist travel watch, the Hamilton Wrist travel watch.
We found it.
I've had it for a little while. I'm not gonna lie. I picked it up from Roman, and he told me the next person that I have to give it to is Michael Woods, who I'm seeing tomorrow. Thankfully.
Nice.
So today's the last day I'm wearing it, so I might as well, really make the most of it. And it's just been great. It's been really good, particularly like just looking around on it. You can really see the people that have worn it.
Yeah.
obviously I'm noticing, like, I can see Benoit here, right? Like, I can see, like, markings from people that I know, but even like some people I don't know. I'm just you know, it's just been really good. It's been really fun to wear. I'm sure Woodsy will take it to Colac and, you know, do some business in there. It's lost a bit of time, so Michael will service it.
Now that's
bring it back up to speed. So yeah,
kind of him. We had a Zoom catch up with a couple of the Fifth Wrist people. I don't know, last weekend or the weekend before, and someone was saying that there's like three or four things that has gone wrong with that watch. Like multiple parts have been replaced.
Yeah.
So it's yeah, it's not all original anymore. But anyway, yeah. Woodsy will fix it.
There you go.
Very cool. Vinny.
Yeah, it's been so long between podcasts. I was a bit nervous to get back on the mic, but instantly seeing your faces felt right at home. So happy to be here. I'm drinking a pretty cheap and nasty tequila, margarita, just random old fun tequila lying around. And on wrist is the none other than the Chick Lip.
The Chick Lip.
Which is keeping great time.
mine
is a fantastic specimen. So thank you, Benoit, for giving me a ripping example.
Nice. All right. I am drinking my old faithful ultra low carb beer just for Benoit, because this is the first time we've had a pod since the Chick Lips were delivered. So I am also wearing my Chick Lip, but just in case others wore it too, I've got my BLNR on as well, because I felt like not copying everyone. So anyway, this is I got my Chick Lip back on the wrist now, which is quite exciting. I just got to wait for summer to end, because I don't want to destroy this leather strap. And it's been hot here in Adelaide, so nighttime's okay, but during the day I just can't do it. But super thank you to Benoit again. I know he's had many thanks and he's probably sick of hearing it now, but, you know, just unbelievable what he did. Was so cool to go to a watch get-together back in Adelaide when I came back from overseas. And, you know, people had seen it. They had seen, and they were saying, one guy said to me, oh, yeah, I'm going to get one. And I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. You can try. No, it's very, very, very cool. So thank you, Benoit. All right, let's get into the questions. So I did want to ask just what's one thing you've been up to lately that you're happy to share with everyone? Can be about watches, can be about anything else. But yeah, why don't we start with Chareth?
One thing I've been up to lately, I've been playing a lot of tennis.
Yeah.
I don't think everyone's noticed it. So you all know Jarrett, who I've met through Fifth Wrist.
Yeah.
So he lives quite, about 10 minutes away from me. And just as an excuse to catch up, we just said, hey, let's start playing tennis. And just like watches, you know, once you start getting into it, you just want to be, you just really get into it. So now, like, you know, Jarrett and I are, you know, we essentially only share tennis, like, training videos to each other, and we've started playing three times a week. We've joined two different clubs, and now we're playing pretty competitively. I just came from a three setter with him, where we're playing doubles. So yeah, just tennis has been big, and obviously the Australian Open was recently here in Melbourne, which is probably the best 2 weeks to be a Melburnian. I've pretty much lived at the Australian Open, which is very cool. Nice. Saw some, and it kind of like going to the Grand Prix. There's a lot of great watches. you just see a lot of cool watches there. You know, mostly obviously the big brands, but you see some pretty interesting stuff out there as well. So tennis has been a big part of my life at the moment.
What are you sporting when you're on the court, both sartorially and on the wrist?
I wear sweatbands. I sweat heaps. All right. So I wear, like, sweatband guy.
That's very 70s and 80s with a sweatband. That's cool.
Yeah, double sweatband guy. Like, just a single, like, you know, Rafa head sweatbands.
Yeah.
I pretty much wear a t-shirt that fits me. And I wear some, like, clay court Asics.
I kind of imagine that you might be dressing like a basketball player on the tennis court. No,
so I wear very short shorts.
Oh, that was the other option. That was the other option. Athletic. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Gotta let him know.
Meanwhile, Jarrett's like in like proper tennis gear. Like he looks like he's.
Has he got matching like tops and bottoms?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He looks great, and I'm just like this sweaty partner of his.
Excellent.
Excellent. Oh, shout out to Jarrett.
Jarrett, at least you don't have the issue of all the gear, no idea.
No, I've got all the gear. I just can't fit into it at the moment. Sorry. I've got all the other stuff. Don't worry about that.
Oh, dear. All right, thanks for that. T-San, what about you?
News. I mean, I've got a lot of things that are going great at the moment. I guess, I don't know if we talked about it, Tommy, in our last driving time, but I guess dramatically for me, I've pulled out of the Australian rowing team. They wanted us to go and live in Canberra for 2024 in the lead up to the Paris Olympic and Paralympic Games, and that was something I couldn't commit to. So as soon as they made it known that that's what their decision was, within days I let them know that I was pulling out. So I now am back at work. It's my end of my second week back at work, which is pretty tough, pretty groundhog. Certainly makes the weekends go faster when you know you've got to go back to work on a Monday. So yeah, that's some news. It's not bad news. It's just a big change. So that was a great couple of years while it lasted, and I feel like, you know, I achieved some good things, especially in the second year with some great people, and it was good. And it'll be interesting watching them hopefully do well on TV.
Yeah. Wow. That's a big decision for you, though. Or was it an easy decision just because you didn't want to move? Or
do you know what? I think it's easier because as a human what you want these days.
Yeah. Right?
So when you're younger, I guess it can be easy because, as an example, I'm assuming that the coxswain who gets the crew this year, it'll be their debut on the Australian rowing team, and they'll be going to a Paralympics in their first year, and they could be like 19 or 22 or something. So, you know, much like it was an easy decision for me because I know myself and I know what I wanted to do and not wanted to do, it's also an easy decision when you're young if you're the kind of person, as I was, who just takes opportunities. Like, that would be an opportunity. If I was 19, I'd be like, bang, I'm there. I'll move to Canberra. What do I need to do?
Yeah, don't stop talking.
I was watching you taking a wrist shot.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thanks for sharing.
How long are you off work, T-Son?
Well, almost 2 years.
Okay, so you got nothing to complain about. You're a jerk.
No. I absolutely, absolutely love my time off.
Yeah, and you look like you've had a great 2 years, honestly. Amazing.
I think I did. I certainly did try to make the most of it. And it was all around rowing. Like, there were things that I did, you know, before rowing tours, on rowing tour, and after rowing tours. And that included I had holidays with my children, with my girlfriend, with car mates, and then other rowing regattas as well with different people. So I certainly made the most of it. So no regrets, and it's all good. Just a change.
Nice. Yep. Nice. Vinny, it's been so long, mate. Where have you been?
It's been ages. I've been very quiet. I've spent my time on two wheels lately. I've got myself a motorbike. That's probably the biggest change in my life, which freaked out a lot of people.
Freaked me out. You know, yeah, freaked me out.
Yeah, I think my mum jumped about 6 feet in the air when I told her there was a bike being delivered tomorrow. So it's been heaps of fun being very safe and responsible as much as I can. It's pretty awesome riding up and down Beach Road to work. On those nice days, it's a bloody beautiful way to start the day. So very exciting,
and
very fun.
It's not you we're worried about. It's the other dudes who are going to run you off. Yeah, and so what sort of bike should we be looking out for, mate? Is it, what colour is it like for us non-bike people? What are we looking for?
What am I running off the road?
Yeah.
Target practice. At the moment, you won't miss me because I'll have a high-vis vest on with my little learner plate.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'll have for maybe another month. So coming a Deliveroo or Uber Eats near you. But yeah, it's a reliable black Honda, so nothing too special, but it'll last me forever and a day. So yeah, very much enjoying it.
There's a limit, right? You can only ride a particular power engine at this stage, right?
Yeah, there's either under 650cc, which sounds like a lot.
It does, yeah.
But then there's also power to weight ratio as well. So
yeah,
it's not like really underpowered, but it's not too crazy either. So
yeah.
And when it'll last you forever, will it really? Like, watches, won't you, the moment you can, upgrade?
I mean, yeah, 100%. I want a Ducati. Like, that is for sure. I definitely want a Ducati. But yeah, it's a Japanese made bike, like the cars. I just, if I wanted to, it would just keep going. So, yeah. But nice. No, the itch is definitely there to just instantly get my full license and go get a sweet looking Ducati. But yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Awesome.
So, nice. Vinny, has Dane convinced you to go to a track day yet or?
Not quite. I think actually his experience has made me go, I don't think I need a track day on two wheels. I think track day on the car will do me just fine.
Yeah. I'll ride safe. There's some pretty compelling TV ads on at the moment about bikes. So anyway, good luck.
All the gear, all the time. Thank you.
Good. Tom, what about you?
I've been doing not a lot watch related. Just been trying to put my race car back together and fighting with it every step of the way.
Okay.
It's always one step forward, two steps back.
And remind us of your race car again.
It's a 1992 or 3 RX-7, Mazda RX-7.
Oh, yeah, so cool. So the
third gen, timeless shape.
Yeah.
Wasn't there some video of you hopping in a car just recently? Was that yours or was that your dad's?
Yeah, that was. I shared that on my personal Facebook. That was me running in my dad's Series 3 RX-7's race engine at Calder Park.
Cool.
On the combined circuit and Thunderdome, which was an experience.
Very cool. Nice.
What about you, Anthony?
Well, I think what I can share, I joined the gym. And I used to go to the gym a lot, but last year in late November, I got smacked with pneumonia and ended up spending 2 weeks in hospital, which came,
I remember that.
Came quite quickly. Like, sure, I had a bit of a chest infection for a week or so, but you always think like, you know, it's eventually going to go away, or you just have one of those coughs that last a couple of months and they don't really stop you doing anything. And anyway, turns out that wasn't the case. So I ended up in hospital, and then it was a good kick in the ass, I think, because I just was thinking that walking the dog every day was enough, but you need to get your heart rate up. You need to get fit and stay fit. So I've been at the gym the last week and a half, and I've really, really enjoyed it. So I feel good. Doesn't take long for some of that old muscle to start showing again in the mirror. So it's pretty, you know, you get a bit happy about that. But yeah, I think time to stop using like a kid and life and stuff as an excuse. And it's about me and staying healthy and putting myself sort of first, I think, just for a little while, and then try and, you know, work out how to maintain it. But that's been really good. So yeah, enjoying that.
How long have you been married for now, Anthony?
Poor, 2016. So 8 years this year.
Yeah, that's great. I think
the
longer you're married, I think the more important that becomes, what you just said, which is to look after yourself first.
100%. And it's,
if you're not in good shape physically, mentally, you're certainly not going to be putting your best foot forward to your wife, and you're not going to be attractive to your wife and, you know, doing all those things. So I think that's
a
good time to have come to that realization.
It was interesting because my wife kept playing soccer through the last couple of years, and, you know, soccer's her passion and she just absolutely loves it, you know, which is great. But she made the decision this year to sort of stop playing and just be involved as a, you know, team manager and just support her parents who are involved in the club a lot. But she's gone and started up this, like, you know, those boxing round classes where you just go different stations, like 9 rounds you've got in Melbourne. And she's really enjoying that. She comes home, she's absolute toast from it. So it's, you know, trying to go do that 3 times a week, like it's a solid, solid workout. So good on her for sort of hanging up the boots, but still wanting to keep going, staying fit. So that's kind of made me go, you know what, I'm going to do the same thing,
cool.
Which has been good. So
nice.
Rightio. First question about watches. Where are you at on your collecting journey? Because, and the reason I want to ask this, because mine's quite interesting, but it's just interesting to hear about where people are at because things change so much over time. So why don't we start, we'll start with a different person first each time. Vinny, where are you at with your collecting your watches?
Such a great question. I think what comes to mind is that graph that we've all seen before is, you start and everything is interesting and you're looking at like your few hundred dollar Seikos, like, and you're looking at a case back for the first time and you're just absolutely marveled by it. And then you slowly spend that like $2,000 and then you go to $5,000 and then you go, Rolex is boring, or you get your Rolex, or, you know, that if you're lucky enough, you know, you go through that and you go, actually, no, I want to go do something crazy and buy a blue ceramic Speedmaster perhaps. And then you enjoy that for a little while. And then you go, actually, crap, Rolex is like, it's just, there's something about it. And I'm already hear Roman in my ear being like, no, Vinny, don't do that. Don't go down that route. But there's just something.
He'd say it in much worse words than that.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be like, no, don't do that. He'd be like, fuck off.
Yeah, they'd be jumping across the table at me. I thought I'd try not to make this episode rated R. It's like immediately, yeah, sorry, as we usually do.
Yeah, it's us. It's going to be rated R.
First sentence. Yeah, so then I go, well, this brand I'm like fascinated by, not just because of the watches, but cultural and like how, like, it's just insane how far widely reaching it is to so many people and all the reactions from the lay person to the watch person towards the brand. So you end up coming back going, yeah, okay, Rolex is like the bee's knees. Still super appreciate absolutely everything that's out there, but yeah, I guess I've gone and got that crazy watch, that blue Aventurine Speedmaster, only to be like, this is fun, this is really cool, I'm glad it exists, but I keep scrolling when looking at, on Chrono for Rolex. And so in my mind, that's where I am on that timeline of collecting. And then also something that's, I had the thought the other day, since I've been in watches, the value in the market and demand and the footprint that watches have had on culture has only been increasing and on the up. And now it's starting to see like the economy's softening and how that effect has on the industry as a whole and also other collectors. And so I think we saw the crash, like if you've been around long enough, you would have been around for the GFC, or you would have been around to see like a Roger Dubuis go down the gurgler, or Frank Muller, or Panerai. And then this is probably my first experience of seeing like across the board, all brands really soften and what's really, really hard to move, or how the general collector taste is changing. So it's like it feels like a first time all over again. But then I also feel like, yeah, I think I know what watches I want to collect going forward, full stop.
I have a follow-up question, if I may. Do you think that, two questions, do you think that the hype on Instagram and YouTube and everywhere contributes excuse me, to the full circle back to Rolex? And secondly, do you think the stigma of Rolex to the layperson who doesn't give a shit about watches over the last 5 years, because of how much the awareness has grown due to the thefts and all sorts of stuff, do you think that that stigma has slightly dropped a little bit and people see it and just sort of move on, as opposed to, 10 years ago they would have seen it and gone, oh, yeah, must be really successful. You know, he's made it. He's got a Rolex. Whereas now, I don't know. What's your thoughts?
I think, yeah, first question, I think my answer would be the hype and the Instagram being absolutely on fire. We had nothing else to do during lockdown, and YouTube channels were, yeah, dime a dozen. They were coming out and new content all the time. And yeah, it definitely stirred up the demand and the, like, oh, if you've got a Rolex, if you can skip the wait list and you're somebody, compared to someone who has to walk in and beg and nobody, be a nobody, I guess. And that has created the effect of people being really passionate one way or the other. Like, I've had people, both watch collectors and non-watch collectors, come up to me and go, you know what? I don't ever want a Rolex because of all this crap and the experience that it, creates. And then other people which will openly say, man, I can't get one, nobody can get one, that makes me want one even more, because I want to be that person in the room who, holy crap, how did you get that watch? Yeah, long story short, I think it's just divided people one way or the other, because you've got a passionate opinion about the phenomenon one way or the other.
Yeah, fair enough. Any other thoughts to that for the other guys?
Well, you got like certain suburbs, like I'm just speaking from my experience. So you got certain suburbs. If I go to a certain restaurants in Melbourne, everyone in that whole restaurant is wearing a Rolex.
Yep.
So it's kind of, like for me personally, I don't really bat an eye to it. Like I don't, you know, it doesn't kind of drive me towards them in any way, or doesn't make me go, oh, look at you, you've got a Rolex, like as opposed to something a little bit more obscure. Just because, you know, you'll have people who will just get a Rolex because they can, as opposed to, you know, they really care about it. It's just kind of as valuable as like their LV wallet, right? Yeah. Doesn't, you know, they've got it because it's an LV wallet, you know? So, yeah, I don't know if it's, I don't know if the stigma is there as much as it used to be for me anyway, just because kind of maybe I take it for granted a little bit.
Yeah.
Seeing it around. Yeah.
I certainly do. And I think it's interesting because, you know, you don't often see like, you know, MBNFs and Ervergs and stuff like that, that obscure. But something that would turn your head is like a platinum Daytona or a rainbow or something, you know, really quite rare in the Rolex world that you go, oh, fuck, like that's sick. Like you see Datejusts and GMTs and then you see these dealers that are posting pictures of like 30 Hulks and you're like, that's not good for you, mate, because it's not going to end well soon unless you got them 10 years ago.
Yeah,
that's going to hurt. But
actually, like, what comes to mind, like you said, Chad, sometimes you go into a room full of Rolexes and you don't feel very special. I went to BMW to go just, you know, look at a bike that I obviously was not going to buy. And the salesperson that saw my watch, I was wearing a certain blue and red coloured GMT, and they were floored that they actually, there's one that's actually here and I can see it.
They've seen it, yeah.
And then he called over.
Did you tell him that you spent 32 grand on it?
Well, this is where it gets funny. So he goes, oh, cool. You know, the usual questions that you get. How long did you wait? How much did you pay for it? Where did you get it? And then, to which I don't really like answering. And then he calls over his sales manager and goes, hey, look at this guy. He's got this watch. And then the other guy comes and goes, oh my God, you've got that watch. And so they're absolutely floored and can't believe you've got this watch on your wrist. And then you'll go across the road to another, like a cafe or whatever it is, and no one looks twice at you, and you could be anyone. So, yeah, it was such a funny experience being like...
To jump in, I've noticed at my work, like our business has quite a wide range of roles and stuff within it and different departments. The only people that ever really have watches on that are like luxury watches are the salespeople. The people that really care about image and like appear affluent and seem like they're doing well and things like that, they're the only people. I mean, there's a few other people here and there in other roles, but generally it's all smartwatches. Yeah. And it's only the people that are like customer facing that have to present an image wear watches.
Yeah, interesting. Righto, Charith, what about you? Where are you at with your collecting journey?
Man, it's been interesting. Like, my collecting journey is like better part of a decade, and I went really hard, really early on, and I think I've kind of got a little bit disillusioned with it all. Maybe in the last 3 years, I kind of stopped, and you know, maybe I don't know. I got a little bit over it from a collecting perspective. Some of it also has to do with the fact that I've just focused all my money elsewhere, right? So business and whatnot. And now this year is going to be a fun year. So so from a like a business and work perspective, it's kind of we've ticked some boxes and you know, done some things. So we're kind of taking not as much as T-Sun. I'm not quite taking 2 years off, but kind of slowing it down a little bit. And so there will be, I'm kind of going to go back in the market this year, which will be good.
The difference between you and I, when you talk about fun year and doing it, I can see you hanging out with Hemsworth at Byron in a Rolex, right? Both of you there, you know, in your shorts and no other clothing and just a Rolex and some shorts. And, you know, you'll be...
I'm not taking my shirt off around Chris Hemsworth.
What? He'll love the bear as much as we do.
Maybe Russell Crowe, mate. I'll take my shirt off. Russell Crowe, I don't mind. I can handle that. Hemsworth was going to make me just keep... I'm just going to put layers on just to cover it all. Yeah, so it's been really interesting. And then recently I've just got this newfound love for Zenith as a brand. Nice. I think it's because in Australia we've just got really good brand managers. Zenith, we're lucky. Like, we got really good brand managers that look after, like, they're just very accessible brand managers, which is not always the case with many brands, as some of you guys would know. I've just started. Also, I've got a close friend who's a big vintage Zenith enthusiast. I've started wearing his, like, trying his watches on, and you know, he's got a great DeLuca, which, you know, T-San, you saw me wearing it in the summer. Like, it was just unreal. I'm going to get a Zenith sometime.
Nice.
It's going to be fun. So, just which one? I'm trying to get something that might be a little bit challenging to get. So, we'll see. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Yeah. All right, T-San, what about you?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question because I guess I've been collecting watches for 30 years, maybe a bit longer now. And in that time, as most of you know, I don't really sell that many watches. And it's only been in the last 10 years where you can only buy some watches online and you don't get the opportunity to try them on, that if I bought a watch that I love the look of, then you try it on and it just doesn't wear well on your particular wrist well, that would be the main reason why I've moved a couple of watches on. For example, the Ultraman was one I can think of that I bought online, thought I'd love everything about it. I think I already had the 2998, but they're very different watches. The 2998 has no guards and it's a different size. And when I wore the Ultraman, the stuff I loved about it, all the orange accents, fantastic, but just the way it wore, just and the glowing at nighttime actually didn't do it for me, so I moved it on. And same, actually sold that watch and bought a secondhand Rolex Milgauss, again, which on paper, or my paper, I should have loved, with the dial color and the lightning hand, etc. Again, wore it and it just wore really big and square and heavy, and I just didn't stick, so I moved it on. Now, that sounds like I'm moving on a lot of watches, but they were really the exception. So after 30 years, I thought I'd do a count the other night, because people do ask me how many watches, especially friends, not watch people, friends who know that I'm a watch person. And so I laid them all out on the dining table. I think I sent you guys a photo, but there were 59 watches in my collection at the moment. And I think I forgot that I'd actually had one out on loan to Tom. So I actually have 60. And I think that's a round number, and it's not a number I feel the need to add to.
Yeah.
And then when you mentioned this question, I had a quick look at my Instagram of the watches I bought last year, and the watches that I bought and kept last year, I actually only have four. And I actually think that's a really good example of where I'm at. I bought, in no particular order, the orange Swatch 50 Fathoms, because I've always liked the no rad on the original Blancpain. And I hated the bands that those watches came on. So I swept out the band straight away, and it's a really good looking watch. Very good for like weekends with board shorts, you know, orange bezel, whatever. It's light too, actually, which is quite nice as a different feeling. I bought a Chronograph Autodromo, which is really fucking cool. And the dial is very Giugiaro homage. But great colors as well. But Autodromo, I've got two other Autodromos, time onlys, which I love. So I think there's something going on there. I've always liked that brand, and it's a great watch. Again, it came out sort of early last year, and I just bought it and knew I'd love it and did, which was great. And then the Dan Henry that Tom's wearing at the moment, or has on loan at the moment, that's like a $250 watch, you know, and it's great. It's basically a silver version of a Porsche design from the 70s. And then the other heavy hitter is probably my equally most expensive watch up there with the Rossons, and that's the vintage Explorer from 67. Yeah. So that's my only Rolex, and unsurprisingly, it's the only one that I've I haven't owned many Rolexes, only the Milgauss, but unsurprisingly, it suits me and wears well, unlike the new Rolex do. So, look, I think I'm not There's nothing that I want. Much like the Autodromo chronograph when it came out last year, I didn't want that until it came out, and I'm like, bang, that's me. I'm doing it. It's well under $5,000. It's just an easy decision. But there's nothing that I really want to add to my collection. And I guess also that doesn't help the fact that anything that comes out, I kind of look at my collection and I go, well, I've got this or I've got that. That basically the same watch.
60 watches.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So I'm pretty happy, but that's not to say like those, there were two watches, half the watches I bought last year, they just came out and I like the look of them. So I bought them. And the 1016 is just something that, you know, I think suits me. And if I'm going to own a Rolex, that's the one I'm going to own because it's old and it's small and it's multi-purpose. It is actually a one watch contender. Like if you said to me 60-1, what's it going to be? That would be straight away in the top five contenders, surely.
That question's coming up later. So hold your thought.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks, T-San. What about you, Tom?
I've got to a point in my career where collecting, where it's kind of like stagnated of there's things that I want, but they're either too expensive or I like a brand, but I'm waiting for something that suits me. And even if maybe there's something that suits me, I look at the price of it. And because I'm building a race car and trying to get a lot more track time, I look at the price of it and go, but I could also get a lot more out of my racing and things like that by spending it that way instead. So at the moment there's until I get the car back on track and actually driving it a bit, I can't see myself buying anything. And even then there's nothing in the easy to access price range that I really feel like buying that isn't going to be sacrificing a bunch of budget out of racing to buy it.
Yeah. No, and look, that makes sense.
Challenge between two passions, right?
Yeah. 100%. It's interesting. So I'll talk about mine. I've been wanting to sort of shift priorities to cars, and I've actually made the decision in the last week to not worry about it because I just don't need to, and whatever. That was a decision. But since getting my Daynight, I spent a full 12 months not wanting everything, completely happy, don't care. And I love that watch and I wear it 5 out of 7 days a week. It's done everything I wanted it to do with my daughter. She actually tonight, she put her Flick Flack on and she said, my watch doesn't have a moon. Where's my moon? And so, you know, it's just little things like that that I just go, yes. And it's so good. We go outside each night when we can see it and we say goodnight to the moon. And it's just, it's been something that has lived up to every expectation that I thought it would and more, which for a watch to do, I know that I got the right one. It took me ages to actually commit to it and get my design, but super, super happy with that. But I'm a bit like Vinny. So I've been collecting for probably 12 years and, you know, I went through Tags and some Breitling, however you want to say it. And then I went to Rolex and that was great. And then I went to Indies and they were great, but they had their own issues. And I don't know, just things left sour tastes in my mouth. And I'm just like, nah, you know what? I'm just going to go back to Rolex. And like, I haven't bought one. There's not really, you know, they're all half of the ones that I want. You're not going to get them unless you get lucky, which I'm going to just try and get lucky and I'm in no rush. So who cares? I'll just wait. Doesn't bother me. But yeah, gone the full circle. And I think, I don't know, it's something about once you experience other watches and the issues and then just the lack of that you get with Rolex, and they're just so, and if you do, they're under warranty. And we're lucky we've got Woodsy, who, you know, he's a great help when it comes to fixing things. So I've got no doubts that if anything ever went wrong, you know, just ship it off. My Explorer got serviced by him sometime last year, and that was its first service in 19 years. And he opened it up and he said, it's just fantastic. It looks amazing. did the service, sent it back, and it's awesome. Like, you know, so, and that's a 20-year-old watch. How many of these independents in 20 years' time are going to be that much of an easy solution to get fixed? So I don't know. Anyway, I think it's just putting your money safe, but you also enjoy them as well. And I'll, there's a question later that I'll bring up a certain Rolex that we can chat about. So yeah, interesting. I feel like this, the group and a lot of people are just a little bit tired, and you're just going back to the basics and what do you really love? And you're not really on the search for everything, and you're not going down rabbit holes like we used to do. It's kind of like you kind of hit this sort of peak where you're just like, you know what? They're cool things, but there are other things in life, and they're always going to be there, and I'll come back to them when I'm excited again. That's kind of, but in saying that, I can't wait for April and for Watches and Wonders and for the Rolex. Every year that day is just, and it's always good for us because it's like 7-8 o'clock at night. So you've done work, you've been waiting all day, and then you just get online and bang, they start popping up. So I'm really excited about that. Hopefully we can do a podcast that night and do what we did. I think it was 2 years ago where we watched everything happen live, which was really cool.
I just like doing, like seeing what brands will come up with to see if they actually break the mold and things like that and actually challenge themselves or if they're still the same.
Yeah. And that's interesting you say that because quite a few people say that, but then you get to a point where you actually don't give a shit. And if they do what they do well, just keep doing that. You know, like I love the cloisonné enamel puzzle dial with the emojis. Like that is just unbelievable. Seriously, if anyone ever got offered that and you could afford it, you'd buy it.
Yeah.
You would.
Absolutely.
I don't care what anyone says. So, yeah.
And then you'd book a one-way ticket to go visit Roman.
No. Well.
Roman will come find you if you own it.
I reckon maybe that's the watch that would break the camel's back in his case. If he saw it in real life, he'd go, you know what? This is cool.
I'd love to see one.
I thought you were going to say break the camel's back in convincing him to commit murder.
Nah. He doesn't need convincing, that guy. All right, cool. I'll stay on the question I was going to ask T-San before. Who's going to go first? I'm going to go
T-San.
T-San. All right. If you had to sell them all except one, which one would you keep?
Well, something you just mentioned, Anthony, probably comes into now my way of thinking, and that is let's take two watches, the Rossons and the 1016. So the two most expensive watches that I've spent, which in the grand scheme of things is actually not, then what I paid for them was not that expensive compared to what other people spend on watches. But for me, they're my two most expensive watches. They're so me in different ways, but certainly what you said about servicing it, like if you had to service that watch in 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, if something went seriously wrong with it, you know, what, I know Woodsy could look after the Explorer.
Yeah.
I don't know who would look after or if he could look after the Rossons. So that would come into play.
Yeah.
But then also, you know, I've got these other watches, even like the Skipper I'm wearing today. It's just so interesting and it's so of a period and I just, you know, I love it. So it would be a really hard decision for me, but without going through my 60 watches right now, I would say, you know, it could possibly come down to something, you know, once you got right down to the semi-final and then the final, it could be literally the 67 Explorer versus the 2016 Rossons or whenever it came out, you know, and that's, and I think I'd probably go with the Rolex.
Interesting.
Which is funny because I've got a hell of a lot more percentage of Omega in my collection or Tag in my collection, you know.
Well, like as someone who's known you for a while, I just don't think of, when I think of Rolex, I certainly don't think of you.
No.
Like, you know, you're
just, I think
like,
of Hoya. Think of
Rolex guy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Hoya Skipper, the Tag,
I think of
Hoya,
like Autodromo and Hoya. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Tag Hoya Skipper is a great one because, you know, I do wear it in many different ways and it's interesting and it's, and it, you don't see it on everyone's wrists, and you won't, which is great. In fact, I mean, from that perspective, there are far less Hoya skippers, Hideki Hoya skippers, than there are explorers, you know? So that might come into play, but yeah. So, I mean, again, there's three watches in contention. So this is not an answer. I can't give you this answer.
This is an answer for a man that has 60 watches.
Exactly. Why don't you go around the room, and then by the time you go back, I'll come back to me and I would have thought about it some more.
All right, Vinny, go. What is it?
Yeah, it's a pretty easy one for me. It's the Rolex GMT. I look at that watch like the day I got it every single time, and I just love that thing. It's been a year and a half now, and it's still the same feeling every time I put it on and I wear it and I look at it. So yeah, that's not gone anywhere.
No, fair enough.
Easy answer. Thank goodness.
Charith.
Are we giving up our chick clips? Is this happening?
Yeah. I guess so.
Poor Ben was like, there's like 24 in the world, and 22 of them been given away. maybe what you got. It's a hard question. My watches are tend to be kind of around the same level. I'm probably going to go sentimental, and also what like people know me as wearing, which is my North Flag, right? Yeah. Like everyone knows me as wearing my North Flag. Charis being the guy with the North Flag, right? So I probably would keep that. My wife gave it to me when neither of us were really a part of the watch community or anything like that. So it was, it's kind of something that's always around. Just probably go to one of my kids, you know. I won't sell it. So, probably my North Flag. But, yeah, Benoit, I'm not going to give up the chick loop. I'll hide it somewhere.
I'd just like to say there was a hesitation in Charith. He knows which kid it's going to, but he wasn't going to say.
Well, I was listening to Anthony talking about being a father, and he's like, him and his daughter saying bye to the good night to the moon and stuff. I'm like, he's a much better dad than I am. I'm like, get to bed. I'm watching Rocky 3. Like, get away from me.
She's still two though. Yeah, when she's a bit older.
Yeah, yeah. Even at two, I was like, get out. I'm watching news.
Very good. Very good. North Flag. All right. Tom.
Despite having a watch that was given to me as a 21st birthday present that got me into watches, it's a pretty easy answer for me, and it would be the fifth wrist Settimana.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a sick watch.
Because following Dane for ages, and he's part of the reason I got into watches, there was a period when I started to get into watches, he just posted nothing but Oxen Juniors that he had like coming in and going out. So I loved them massively from that, and lusted after one, and had planned to buy one at about the same period that I got a message that was like, we're going to do our own one. I was like, okay, cool. That's
done. Yeah, you know, I'm so happy you got that.
I've really enjoyed watching Tom's collecting from almost day one, because in some ways I feel it's so different to the way that I did it. Like his was a thoughtful, calculated decisions based on knowledge and money, like budget. Mine was felt more like there are things I wanted, and so I saved up for them and bought it, or things that just came along that I could afford that I liked, so I bought it. I've noticed, you know, with Tom, it's been very measured and thinking about, well, how will I spend $500, or how would I spend $1,000? And to that point, also what he said, I give similar credit to Anthony with the Oxen Junior. Like, I know I bought mine from Dane, and I know he had a few doing the rounds at dinners that we went to, etc. But your original enthusiasm for them, Anthony, was what sort of really drew me in. But something about my collection I love is that I have an Oxen Junior, and I have it because A, I like it, I wear it, but also those other things.
Yeah.
That experience of discovering them through you, buying it from Dane. I think I bought 3 or 4 watches from Dane now as well. And they're that type of thing. I bought the Rossons from him as well, because you don't get to try on a Rossons in Australia anywhere except from him. I've tried them on over in Barcelona, and that's the only other place that I've actually ever seen them for sale. So, and I can't afford those ones. So,
yeah.
I think I've made that comment about Tom. Like, it's been really interesting watching him, and I don't know how much he loved the Oxen Junior, how much he loved the Fifth Wrist connection, you know, how lucky he is to have a chick lip as well. Yeah, it's interesting.
That's cool.
And to come back, I don't know if you've asked everyone yet, you can answer in a sec, but No, you go on. I'm still thinking. I'm still looking at my collection.
All right, mine may surprise. So if I'm thinking about it, the way I would think about this is, if I live to survive another, say, 40 years, 77 years old, and I would have been on a journey with a watch and enjoyed it, lived every day with it, you know, whatever, I think for me it would have to be the BLNR.
Wow.
Multiple reasons, mostly sentimental, but also longevity. You know, when I think about my daughter, either way, to hand that to her, you know, later on in life, fantastic. The Oxen Junior, you know, it would be so hard for me to give that watch up because I love it so much. But at the same time, like, I don't know, they're so scarcely produced that if something went wrong with a Rolex in 20 years' time, you can get it fixed fairly easy. If something goes wrong with that and they're not around, then I'm stuffed.
How true is that? Like, can Woodsy open it up and go, well, I can see how this works. It's only the front stuff. The back stuff is the same, and I can figure out the front stuff. I don't know. Like,
It's interesting because so my Dana has 13 additional parts on top of the base movement that do all the complications, which is fucking stupid.
Only 13.
Exactly. Only 13. Exactly. And even more stupid, their annual calendar, it's either their annual calendar or the moon phase, has 5 pieces.
Yeah.
Like, but I guess you'll have to be able to find someone that can fabricate those parts. And I don't know, maybe it's not. And maybe that's the beauty of Ludwig Oschlin, is he makes it so simple that any Muppet with a CNC machine could copy the piece and make it again and make it work just as good as it came out of the house.
I've enjoyed. Go on, Tom.
To jump in. I know in my experience with race cars, like coming up with an idea of how to do something, you might come up with it one way, and then someone that's experienced with it and design things and things, they come over and go, no, you idiot, you just do it this way, and it's way simpler and way easier to replicate. And you go, I've never thought of that. So for Woodsy, that could be what it's like opening the Oxen Junior. He looks at it and goes, wow, this is a really simple and easy way of doing a pretty complicated thing that I've never thought of. It's just how Ludwig approached it and came up with things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll add to that as well. I had the pleasure not long ago, maybe 6 months ago, I went to see Woodsy. I visited him in Colac actually, because I had a couple of watches that I'd like him to get running again. One was a lovely watch, a little watch from probably about the 20s that my ex-wife and I bought her from a vintage, not a watch shop, like from an antique jeweler. And my daughter, my second daughter's been wearing it, which is lovely, but it stopped. So, and you know, I couldn't get it going. So I said, I'll take it to Woodsy. And I took another watch for another friend whose the dial had moved. It was a Bucherer that they'd bought overseas. And so I took those to Woodsy, and he introduced me to his whole family at Woods Jewelers. And let me tell you, I'm pretty convinced, having met Ben, his brother, that between the two of them, they could manufacture what is required.
Yeah.
From the dial, because I'm seeing like Ben slowly working on making his own watch as well. But he makes the most incredible jewelry as well, like bespoke custom made jewelry, which is high level jewelership, whatever the right word is for it. And of course, you know,
goldsmith.
Maybe he's definitely a goldsmith. I mean, this gold necklace that he made for this lady, it's on their website, Woods Jewelers, Woods_Jewelers. is incredible. And I've become a bit of a fan of buying Christmas gifts and Valentine's Day gifts from there as well since. But I think coming back to my answer, I think whatever the answer is, whichever watch it is, something I'll really enjoy doing, and this has been on my plan for a long time, is with a 60 watch collection, I'd love to give away a lot of watches to my close friends and my family. So, you know, there are watches that I can see my children wearing. You know, Matthew, you know, I could probably leave half a dozen watches to him. The girls, I could leave a couple of watches each to. Not because of numbers, just because the watch suits them.
Yeah.
And also my friends, my very close friends. Before I met you guys, like, I'd always thought about leaving certain watches to certain people my close friends. So it'd really be nice, actually, just to go through as an exercise, you know, the 60 watches and just put people's names on the back of them. And if you died tomorrow, you know, what a lovely remembrance of someone.
Oh, yeah. Massive.
Just to hijack this quickly, because Anthony got me thinking about this originally, and then T-San's thing, what T-San just said, really clicked it into gear. What watches or what watch would you get buried with versus giving away? Because I was thinking about it from Anthony when he was saying I'd give my daughter the BLNR and the day and night. So I'm like, is he getting buried with the chicklet then?
Probably.
That's a good idea with the chicklet.
That's the one I'll go down with. Absolutely. I don't have to give it away then. And it might stop working like me, so it's kind of, it'll be fitting.
Either that or everyone that dies, they give their chicklet back to Benoit and then he gets buried with all the chicklets.
Surrounded
by all his chicks.
Oh, dear. All right. Well, good questions. Interesting answers.
I could just see T-San getting buried with 60 watches scattered all over his body.
In a bathtub and then fill it up with dirt.
Didn't someone send me a photo of that? There's some Asian dude who gets around. He's got a jacket and they're all hanging up in his jacket or something like that. Did you see that?
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Yeah. No, look, I love
him. Oh, yeah. His jacket was like made of his watches.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do love having the it's a morning ritual. I get up, I have a shave and a shower, I make myself a coffee, and then I open up the safe, put away the watch from yesterday, and get out and choose one for the day.
Wow, that's cool.
And I enjoy doing that. And it's, you know, every day it's a different watch.
And he still hasn't worn any clothes yet. He's just walking around naked with a coffee and a watch.
I like to air dry.
I love it.
Oh, dear.
I open up the blinds as well, so my the apartment block across the road get a show.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. All right, next question. An interesting one. So let's see where this goes. What does the word grail mean to you? Who hasn't started? I don't think Tom started.
Oh, I'm glad the answer is what does the word grail mean and not what is your grail? They're two different questions. That's great. No,
just what does it mean?
Great.
Tom.
Oh, sorry. A watch that takes great sacrifice and time to achieve.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Good short answer. I like it. Charith?
Grail. Okay, so obviously I'm going to think of Indiana Jones or something like that. Like, when I think of Grail, I think of something that's just like impossible to get. So that's why I don't personally believe in grails for me, because I just like I've got heaps of friends, and Vinny, you know them as well. Like, we've got heaps of friends who've bought their grails and then 2 weeks later they're on to the next one, and they've gone, this is the watch, this is my grail, and they've got it, and then, you know, just because they've got the means and they've got the hunger, right, they're on to the next one. So yeah, I just don't think, I just don't, personally, I don't really acknowledge grails for me. But if I see someone who, you know, as Tom said, who's just busted their ass and they've got something that they just gives them complete and, you know, absolute joy, and they're calling it their grail, I'm happy for them.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Surely cool. What you're referring to, Charith, is someone's Grail watch is the one that they is the last watch that they buy, and the and the and maybe oh, the one that
yeah.
that they stick with, that no, they love. It's,
because I always feel like when people apply, because the last watch you buy, like your last watch might not necessarily be your most expensive or valuable or not watch, right?
No.
So I think people put a, like the Grail tends to be the hardest watch to get.
Mm.
And that usually means it's the most expensive or the most exclusive, right? So it might not necessarily be your last, but there's always going to be something more expensive, more exclusive. Like, that's just the way the watch industry works.
When I say your last, I don't mean the most recent. I mean your one you buy and you go, that's it. That's the watch. That's the. I don't need to buy any more watches now and I don't need all the others. This is the one.
But that's what I mean. Like, I just don't – I don't know any watch collectors, like actual watch collectors that finish up like that.
Right.
Mm. I just feel like they go, yep, this is the one. This is it. And then 2 weeks later – and I've just seen it. I've just seen it so many times.
That's but I thought you also. I thought you also said when you do, you've run into people and they've said, "This is the watch. I love it." Like, it's not the Grail. It's.
They, I don't know, but they've called it their Grail.
Oh right.
And then you know, then suddenly they're getting the new Patek and Well, they've realized that they've got the means to just go hunting even further. So
yeah, fair enough. All right, I'll go. So I think similarly, I think to Charlotte, I think the Grail is unattainable unless, you know, things significantly change for you into the future and you use that as some sort of goal. Okay. But I do think there's such thing as an attainable Grail, and it's the one that, you know, you might lust after a long time, make sacrifices, but it's not the pinnacle. If I think for me, you know, that day night for me, it's done everything I wanted it to do. I'm really not that interested in much else. Sure, I like Rolex, and if the right one came up and it was offered, I'd probably get it, but it's not like it was when I was looking for the BLNR, when I spent 3 years going into AD after AD all over the world to try and get one, and the last one that I looked at that I wasn't going to go to was the one that sold it to me. So there was that. I'm not there anymore. I couldn't give a shit, to be honest. But it's kind of if the right one came up that I liked, and we'll talk about it in a minute, I'd do it. But like a Roger Smith for me would be, you know, but they're, you know, £200,000. You're not going to get on the list. That's $500,000 nearly. I'd love one though. I see that you just look at them and you're just like, fucking, it is just fucking perfect. Like, why aren't more made like that? I don't know. Is it that hard? But yeah, I think it's attainable, and it does frustrate me seeing, like, I see it all the time in like the talks with Tim Mosso group and the big Facebook groups in America, where like I bought the first of my Grails for this year. And I'm like, what? It doesn't even make sense. You just bought another watch, mate. Chill out. Anyway, whatever. T-San.
Grails.
Well, I think the fact that I've never had a Grail probably answers a bit of that question for me.
Yeah.
So I don't think I really believe in them. But if you do ask me to define it for myself, I would have to say a Grail is something that you couldn't afford unless something really dramatic happened, like you won $200 million.
Yeah.
So you have $200 million and you can buy a watch. You can buy any watch, really.
Yeah.
And I think your example of a Roger Smith is a great example of something. My immediate thought was like a vintage watch that is both epic but also very rare and very expensive. Might be a Grail watch that I would go and buy if I won $200 million.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I don't really believe in it. I've never had one.
Interesting.
What about you?
Who's Vinny? Next? Who's last? Vinny.
Might be me. I sort of side with Charith when Charith goes, there's always another Grail around the corner. Yeah, I was that person. I thought a Platinum Traditionnel and that would cure all the want I had to do with watches. And thanks to Dane, I got to wear it for a week, and it was amazing for that week. But yeah, I think like I still would have wanted other watches, and so the idea of a Grail is, yeah, probably if you spent every ounce of your being as reasonably possible and you stretched as hard and as far as you could with the means that you had available to you, and you just got that watch that made you feel content and you didn't want any others, like you might pick up, you know, a watch here and there, but it doesn't feel the same in the way that, like, if you had to pick one watch up every morning, it would be that one that you tried with all your being to get. Maybe that's the closest thing to a Grail. But yeah, there's always going to be another watch. There's always going to be another one out there. So the concept in itself is, yeah, it's a strange one, but if I had to nail it down and say, what does it feel like to me? It's the one that you try as hard as you can and you finally get there and you feel totally content. And if you don't get another watch, then that's totally fine because you're going to keep picking that same one up every morning.
Yep. Yep. Interesting. Interesting. I'd like to ask this question to a few more people. Maybe as we do a few pods each year, we'll just keep asking that.
You should ask it to a person that says, this is my
Grail. Yeah,
like straight after and go, why? You know, yeah. Like, yeah.
I sometimes troll those Facebook groups. I shouldn't. I shouldn't, but it's too easy sometimes. Anyway.
Oh, and one more thought. It's like, Anthony used to like something crazy like a Roger Smith that's multiple hundred thousand euros. Like to me, because it's unobtainable, it doesn't interest me because it's so far out of reach. Like it's never going to happen.
Yeah, interesting.
I'm like, I can't even call it a Grail because it's just like, well, not in this lifetime. So
yeah. I do wonder with things like that, you know, that they say don't meet your heroes, and sometimes it works to your favor. Other times you really don't want to meet your heroes.
Well, it's funny when you were talking about the Roger Smith, I agree with you. On paper, you look at it and you go, that is fantastic. But like a lot of our watches, what's it wear like for a week?
Yeah, that's right.
Wear like for a month. Like it's pretty full on. It's in my mind, it's like wearing a most precious like grandfather clock on your wrist. Is that appropriate for all situations?
Also, would you like be comfortable wearing it?
Yeah.
Or would you just be shitting yourself the whole time? Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Is it like Nicolas Cage in Gone in 60 Seconds driving the car where he's just like, I'm scared of this now, right? Like, you know, you could be like actually scared of your watch. Just you know.
But put it another way, you could be the person with the most scuffed up looking Roger Smith.
Yeah, that would be actually badass.
Yeah.
If you just had this.
I'd just stick it on a NATO.
All shorts, go swimming with them.
We need more NATOs in Australia. It's too hot here.
And just get some Tell Your Time elastic straps.
That'll do. Yeah.
Thank you, Tom. I owe you a beer.
I was listening to, I found a podcast called, I think it's called The Dozen with, can't remember his name, Liam someone. Look it up, The Dozen. You won't miss it, with Liam Tuff, I think his name is. And he's interviewed quite a lot of people, and I listened to the first one today, not his first one, but the first one to me, and it was with Paul Thorpe. And he talked about the South London watch dealer talked about his journey through watches. Very interesting and quite fascinating. But a lot of them talked about, you know, people in the UK and other places in the world just can't even wear a Rolex anymore. You can't wear them out because you're going to get stabbed. And that poor bloke that got killed with his fake Nautilus on. Yeah, so long ago in the UK, young guy got killed for a fake Nautilus. So anyway, it was just, interesting. I do agree though, like that level, like where do you wear it? What do you do with it? It's. All right, last question and then we'll move on to some Instagram recommendations. So do you have anything on the radar? And I'm going first. So it's funny you should ask that. One of the things that really never interests me ever was Jubilee bracelets. Until one day I just fucking woke up and I'm like, fuck, I want a Jubilee bracelet. Why does this Batman or Batgirl that I'm looking at on Instagram look so fucking good on a Jubilee? And then all of a sudden I'm just like, holy shit, I want something on a Jubilee. And then you look into them and you're like, they are, you know, they're a little bit lighter and they contour your wrist better and they're better for the hotter weather because your wrist breathes. Meanwhile, I'm wearing this BLNR and like sweating through 35 degree heat day. And I'm like, man, I never thought, and even more specific, I actually want one with the hidden clasp, which they did for a period, and it's like 2010 to 2019. It's probably not, but that's what I know they did in the date justs. So I've been looking, and the prices are still ridiculous. So I'm going to wait because they're going to come down and they're going to be real cheap.
Just for a band? Are you talking about just for a band?
No. So an actual watch. So the one, if I could buy it new, the one that really strikes my interest is a domed bezel date just Jubilee with a mint dial. I think that mint green is really nice. I don't normally like green watches, but I like that one. Mainly because I'd never get a black dial Datejust. I say that now, just never say never, but I don't like black. Plus, I've got the Explorer, and I'd also get 36, so just be silly. I don't want a blue dial, and I hope that in the future, if I ever got a green dial, I wouldn't look back at that and go, why did you get a green dial? But I think because I've got other black dial Rolexes, I think it's okay. I would, but anyway, that's the
I think I tried on one of those very watches.
Yeah.
Funnily, with Anthony Doe, we were at Chadston having a coffee, and we went for a walk, and so we went to Kennedy, and it's the one of the few Rolexes I've ever tried on actually in a dealership, and it was the mid dial as well, and I probably wasn't long after buying my ice cream metallic 911.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, the green and the green would work well. And it's not a hardcore green. It's a very subtle
green. Yeah, it's like a satin green and then it's sunburst. And they've just done such a good job with it. But, yeah, the domed bezel Jubilee green, that's if it was new. And if it was older, I really like the silver dial Datejust with the Romans, and it's just kind of this real monotone. But then Jubilee, and you flip it over and you've got hidden clasp with just the Rolex crown there. The only thing I don't like about those mid-2010 Datejust is the case was really fat. Yeah, it's like a square, whether it's they've trimmed down the lugs now, they look a lot nicer.
That's why I got rid of the Milgauss, because it just it felt like a square watch. It was so the lugs were so big. But I have to say, and it's not a bad thing about the Jubilee bracelet, that is a bling watch.
That's
if you're wearing a Jubilee on a Rolex, and you know, to cap it off even with the fluted bezel.
Yeah, but I wouldn't get the fluted.
I know, but like I'm talking like max bling, right?
Yeah, for sure.
That's not a bad thing. That's cool. Like I remember when I was 20 something, I'd be wearing 42, 43 millimeter watches, a rose gold, a Hamilton. I've still got it. A chronograph. It's fucking big, it's obnoxious, and I would love every minute of wearing that watch.
Yeah,
I was like saying to the streets of Sydney, I'm starting to earn some money. That was what I was trying to say.
The only other one that I really like is the 36 mil turquoise OP. Tried one on, and the feel of the new Oyster bracelets compared to the one on my Batman and then the one on my Explorer is completely different. It's so much sharper, crisper, whatever they're doing in the manufacturing to make it sharper and crisper just felt really, really cool. So that one might happen one day, but as I said, I'm not in a hurry, but yeah, 36 mil Rolex is where I'm going and where I'd go now and next.
Yeah.
That's me.
I didn't mind that grape colored one that came out about probably 5-10 years ago.
Now, yeah. Yeah.
The whole series actually had really interesting colored dials, and most interesting was the color that they chose for the dots around the outside of the dial were perfectly contrast to the dial color. See.
Klaus has got one. Klaus has got a grape dial. That's his only Rolex.
Ah, well done, Klaus.
Klaus. What a legend. Shout out to Klausy boy.
Well done.
All right, let's go, Charith. What's the Zenith? Which one is it?
Yeah.
Oh, do you guys know the OG Port Royal?
Oh,
Port Royal? Isn't that a rectangular watch?
Isn't that's the Rolly cigarettes the tobacco I used to smoke. Port Royal.
It's the rectangular.
Yes. Oh wow. Okay.
Which, that's right. Mate, that started in the late 90s, around early like around 2000 that first came out, I think.
No,
right?
not the rectangular one. Hang on.
Oh, sorry.
Port Royal is rectangular.
Oh, here it is. Vintage Watch Co's got one.
So I like that, but I'm kind of jumping around between a DeLuca, because I've really enjoyed wearing that El Primero DeLuca, and I know that they're being re-released because Zenith are doing this whole Icons collection coming out later this year with the white dial, like the panda dial. And then for something a little bit, because I'm thinking, you know, more than one, for something a little bit, you know, out of tune for me, I'm liking the Defy 21 Chroma. So the white one on me, in my skin color, I don't know if you guys have seen, like, it's a big, you know, kind of bit of a...
We've seen your skin color. Right?
Something a little bit wild for me, considering what I've worn in the past. So, yeah, I'm just kind of like, I want to get a something a little bit more traditional and then a modern, you know, colorful, bright, you know, look at me, here I am, watch. Yeah, like a big jerk off watch.
It sounds like something to wear to the Australian Open.
Yeah, pretty much. When I'm hanging out with the Zenith people, like the other day.
Ah, that's where it is. There it is.
Charith, the Defy 21 next to your North flag, I think they both kind of have that similar out there design language. But,
no, the Chroma though?
Yeah. No, I get that the Chroma is a lot more out there.
Yeah.
But it's still of a similar ilk.
Yes. Oh, to the North flag?
From the point of view of departure from the brand's regular.
Oh, sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, where are you going with this, Tom?
Yeah, no, I was like, what?
Completely different watches.
Like, like one of the most, like, pretty understated other than, like, a little bit of yellow.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm just like, I think it's, so there's a guy named Luke Bones here in Melbourne who's like the biggest Zenith, and it's his fault. Like, I'm just hanging out with him too much. And he's just, I don't know anyone that's got more passion for just one singular brand. And anyone that's spent time with him, like, he'll just convert. If you haven't spent much time with Zenith, he's probably the best person to talk to because he'll just convert you over.
He was recently wearing his Rainbow, which is a fantastic chronograph.
Oh, yeah, it's such a great one. And it's, you know, that one's got that big bite mark in it. Have you seen that?
No.
Yeah, one of the bezels got someone's bitten into it.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's got stories. So he's a good guy.
Jesus. Hope no one bites my watches.
He's been in a few. Well, yeah.
It depends under what circumstances.
It's a fair bite.
Was that in a scuffle or is it? Yeah, okay. Yeah,
you know Luke as well. He can handle himself.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
This is the same guy that owns a boxing gym, isn't he?
Yeah. Luke's a good guy. Really lovely, lovely guy. He's one of the first watch guys I met in Melbourne before I met all you guys. Like, you know, I think Erwin and Luke separately were two people that I met. And Luke was, I mean, Erwin was like at the time a very big Rolex-y, pro Rolex type of guy and still is. But Luke was very much my kind of guy from a vintage perspective. You know, I think I bought a watch from Luke. It was the Lemania HS9.
He's still got some Lemania.
And he's got a couple of Lemania still as well, exactly. Yeah. He's got the Royal Australian Navy version of my Royal Navy version of the Lemania. And he's also got some more military with the asymmetric crown guard on one side, etc. Yeah, so he's a great guy, both from a vintage watch perspective and just a human being. And as you say,
I might make him my Instagram recommendation.
I'm sure I already have in the past, like 5 years
ago.
It's
been a while.
We can double up now. Yeah, it's fine.
I was about to say his Instagram, but we'll save it for the end.
All right, it's fine.
Sure. Yep. All right, Tom, is there anything? Or is it just car parts?
I would have thought there was definitely something for you, Tom.
There is, but it flip-flops too much that there's not one set thing.
What are the options?
I would like a Rolex, but that's due to a connection to a car that my dad recently purchased, which raced in a series that was sponsored by Rolex.
What's the car?
A Mazda RX-8 Grand Am that was owned by Team Dempsey.
Really? Sick.
It's not the car driven by Dempsey, but it's the teammate car.
Right.
Cool. So there's that. But then also there's a few like micros and indies that grab my attention, but money is more important for race parts right now than watches.
That's fair enough. Fair enough. All right, T-San then, Vinny.
As I said earlier, I don't have anything in mind. But that's not to say that someone released something on Instagram tomorrow. Look, it would usually be someone I'm already sort of following, whether it's like an Autodromo or, Charis piqued my attention with any re-release. You know, I'm big on re-releases, whether it's Omega or Hoyer or the Zenith. And actually, I'm very surprised, and I think I've said this to Luke, I'm very surprised that I don't have a Zenith, and specifically a Zenith
El Primero
in my collection. Mm. Someone who has half of his collection is vintage, at least, and of that, maybe more than half is chronograph. Mm. I'm very surprised I don't. So, and I've probably come close a few times. So, yes, that's the kind of thing. If someone came out with an Icon release Zenith this year, that could be trouble. Yeah. Otherwise, no plans.
Zenith is coming out with that. So,
I know. I am in trouble.
And Vinny, last one. What Jubilee?
It's funny. I was like, oh, we must have the same favorites on Chrono 24.
Probably.
The one I really want is a 18308 or a 18238 Day-Date.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy with the collection at the moment, so I'm in no rush, and that happens whenever it happens. But yeah, I think a gold, yellow gold Rolex to me has been, something I've always wanted, and I think maybe it's time to just stick to that goal.
Yep.
But I was like, oh, that's, it's a bit on the pricey end still. What has a similar style bracelet and, a mid-2000s Datejust with that hidden crown clasp?
Yeah.
Again, with the squarish kind of Datejust look of that era, the maxi case was really, interesting, really compelling with the fluted bezel. I would go full bling with the Jubilee and a blue dial and a roulette date wheel. But then I looked at it, kept looking at it some more, and it's like, no, I'm just looking at this because I really want a yellow gold day date, which is 36 mil and has that president bracelet. So
yeah,
that happens whenever it happens. I'm in no rush for anything at all. But I'm trying to be good and have one goal and stick to it and then reap the rewards later on when it eventually does happen.
Yeah. I'd love a 36 mil day date. That even just the one of the quiet black dial flat bezel and the oyster bracelet with the hidden clasp, like that would just be fucking stealth. Because you could wear it and most people wouldn't even know what it is. It's like an Explorer.
The 5-digit, even in yellow gold, is a lot quieter than the 6-digit yellow gold Day-Date. Yeah. It's just a little bit less blingy, and it's still yellow gold. Don't get me wrong, but just the way it wears on the wrist and the way it looks,
and the feel as well, the weight.
Oh,
so good.
It's lovely.
Did you guys
Rolex? Rolex. Oh, Rolex.
I know. Terrible.
You guys know your Rolexes a lot better than I do, but. Did I ever tell you about one of my good friends whose grandfather left him a 36 millimeter gold Rolex, but it has on the bracelet and around the bezel little pyramids?
Shapes. Yeah, right.
It is absolutely funky and very blingy. Pyramid shapes. Little pyramid shapes around the whole bezel and then down the center of the bracelet. And it's solid 24-karat gold. Like, I wore this thing and it was just the weight of it and the look of it and the periodness of it, like, I'm assuming sort of late 70s. Amazing. And unlike anything I've ever seen from them.
Wow, yeah, there you go. Pyramid bezel.
You found something?
36 yeah. mil, yeah. Hang on, I'll get a photo.
Is it the oyster quartz? Because I found an oyster quartz.
It's ridiculous. No, this is a day-date, but you can also get it in a date just and maybe an oyster quartz as well. Yeah, there you go. That's got...
How's that?
That one's got gems and stuff, but... Oh, yeah. And it's not on the bracelet, it's just on the bezel. It's like a little hobnail sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Alrighty, let's get on to some Instagram recommendations and then we will shut up shop for another year. Hopefully not. Who's first? Full circle. So, Tom, who is your Instagram recommendation?
Put me out. Hang on.
All right, T-Sam.
No.
He's got it.
Thila Horology. So that's Thiller_heritage. They have a lot of interesting and quite unique vintage pieces.
What is it? Thilia?
I'll type it in the chat.
Oh, yeah. Thilia Heritage. There we go. I wasn't following. Yeah, nice. I love the tank Galbi as well. The really small but full bracelet. Sick. Yeah, cool. Good one.
Yeah, lots of like vintage Cartier and things. And for me personally, at least, a lot of off the beaten track compared to what I'm used to seeing.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm not a huge vintage fan, but I don't know if you guys follow Mr. Enthusiast, that El Bastardo. Oh,
of course.
Fucking hell, mate. The shit that's
mad crush.
The shit that he puts up.
Watches, yeah. His art.
Like, those integrated bracelet APs from the 70s, the white gold, like, holy moly. They're just so good.
I mean, his cars and his watches are
the
same, which is he finds stuff interesting well ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
You know?
He's got a cool podcast too.
Oh, everything.
Yeah, really cool. Like
his art and, you know, his cars and his watches, they are examples of seeing the beauty in ugly.
Yeah.
For example.
Yeah.
As an example. And you know, I guess it's almost the polar opposite to walking into the restaurant full of people wearing new Rolex.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
Very cool.
All right. T-San, go for it.
These, I've been following this one for a while on Instagram. I've always thought it's Smilodone, but it's actually Smilodone, Smilodone. And he's all about vintage Hoyer stopwatches. And he collects them and he sells them. So if you want to get up to speed on vintage Hoyer stopwatches, that's the place to do it quickly. And what got me on, I've been following that for a long time. And I think he also has a Porsche.
Is there any underscores or anything?
I don't know how.
Sorry. I can't find it.
No, that's my fault. Smilodone.
Just lots of men.
You just read it out loud.
Come back to me. Come back to me. You put me on the spot now. I'm fucked.
Hang All on. Right. Look at Vinny, that. Go for
Did
it.
Did we lose Tom?
Yeah, I think we lost Tom. He'll come back. Don't worry. There he is. Oh, there he's offline. T-Sam? Vinny.
Okay.
You got a T-Sam?
Yeah, Smilodone.
Smilodone. Just.
Smilodone. Done.
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 Uh-huh. And Finelli.
Yeah.
Yeah.
November.
Ah, got it. Yeah.
Cool. Cool. Very cool.
Follow.
Did you watch the Ferrari movie, T-Sam?
Yep, I was.
You see that scene with all the stopwatches?
Oh. Yeah, the stopwatches.
With the movie, it was so good. They were in that meeting, yeah. And they were listening for the.
They were in church as well.
That's right. Everyone pulls out their stopwatch. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the backstory to this is, even though I've been following this guy longer, Grip Auto is another Dom, another guy that we've mentioned on Driving Time, and we've had him as a guest. So, obviously, we follow him on Instagram as well. My girlfriend that I've been seeing for about 18 months. She's just fantastic, and she makes special effort around presents. And so she approached Dom, who had a prototype. He's doing his own stopwatches on top of his watches, and he has a black dial stopwatch and a white dial stopwatch. And she approached him separately and said, listen, T-Sun's been banging on about your stopwatches. I want to get one for him for his birthday. And she chose one, and she was really torn between – they haven't come out yet either, but she's organized it with Dom. And she was torn between getting the black one or the white one. And so she told me which one she got, the black one, I think. And she goes, but, you know, if you want the white one, you can swap it. And I said, no, I'll keep the black one that you gave me, and I'll put that in the white Targa, and I'll buy myself a white one, and I'll put that in the green coupe, and that'll go perfectly. So, but Smiler Doan is absolutely, you know, the biggest collector of these vintage stopwatches, Hoya, and I actually have one of the ones as well, which is a rowing stopwatch, which is a Hoya rowing stopwatch, which I bought in 1993 when I first moved to Melbourne. And I was coxing the Australian 8 on the Yarra. And that watch shop that was on Elizabeth Street that's now closed. Do you remember that guy? He was a watch maker.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah. I walked in there in 1993 and saw this stopwatch. And it was like, at the time, it was expensive. $150, I think it might have been.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I have to have it. And then I used it in the boat to work out the rating that we were rating. It wasn't great because it took too long to work it out. But the fact that I used it in
the
boat,
you could still do it.
I've still got it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, awesome.
Sick.
Cool. Jareth. Bones.
Well, I just already telegraphed it. So yeah, great Southern Time. No underscores or dots or anything like that. Great Southern Time. Luke Bones, just a great part of the community here in Melbourne. And he's a lot of vintage, a lot of whiskey, just a nice guy. He also happens to be one of the best boxing trainers in the country. So,
He trains Olympic athletes.
Yeah. Like in Victoria, there's probably about two or three people that can do what he can do, the technicality that he produces. And his gym is very kind of, with all the flash kind of trendy gyms, his gyms is just, it's just stripped, kind of raw, very old school. Yeah,
that's what you want.
Yeah, man.
Cool. And I think Vinny. Vinny, what's yours?
Mine is Mickey Sutt. So that's Mickey Sutt. And I dealt with him recently from buying a watch, that WMT. And he's been amazing to chat to, just because looking at this collection, there's a lot of vintage. I find it like that pure watch collecting of you like what you like and you just buy what you like, and not the usual bits and pieces that you would see on Instagram. So,
cool.
Mickey Sutt, great guy. Cool collection.
Good one. All right. Mine is NATO Slut.
Yes.
Is this your burner account?
It's not my burner account, no. But anyone that calls their account NATO Slut is pretty cool in my books. He's got a BLNR. There's not a whole lot of watches on NATO's, but there are a couple. But just the fact that his name is NATO Slut.
Do you know my NATO story that I love, Anthony, is that when I got my Habring, the flashing seconds, you sent me an appropriate NATO, and I've put it on. I haven't worn that on that NATO.
Well, I'm glad I saw it the other day, actually, in one of your pictures. And I'm glad you did, because I got them sent to me by Scaramanga, from Spain. So that was really cool. He got heaps. He had hundreds of them made, and he sent me 10, and I've still got probably 8 in their plastic. They've not been used. I think I've given a few away, actually.
But that one actually really suits that watch. Was it almost made for that watch? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. I think the story is that he wanted it from Habring done in 20 mil, and they wouldn't do it, so he made it himself. And because Habring, I think, have got another cream and red similar with the triple lines, two thick and one thin.
Right.
And so I think NATO Slut might be a...
NATO Slut's funny, man.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at reading his post.
Just scroll down to the first post.
Yeah.
He's like, hello, my sluts. Can anyone tell me about this watch? And it's just, that's quite funny.
I love wearing that watch on a NATO on a weekend, Anthony. Like yeah. The fact that I think of it as so high horology.
Yeah.
And yet you're wearing it on a NATO with board shorts and a t-shirt on the weekend. I love that.
So glad you do that because that is cool. That is very cool. All right, gentlemen. Any last questions or parting words before we shut down? This has been a lot of fun.
It's good to be back.
I'm missing it. You know, I'm missing hearing stuff that's coming out. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's going on behind the scenes at the moment to bring the level of Fifth Wrist Radio back, the activity up. You know, we're saying
website and everything.
Yeah. We were saying before the podcast, you know, that Roman's really probably been putting in the hard yards out of any of us, and that's great.
Yeah.
We need to kind of fire up again and step up again and get it going. Because another thing I mentioned before the podcast is we've got to remember that not everyone's where we're at in our collecting. Like there are people out there starting out. There are people out there in the middle of it. There are people, you know, in different places. And Fifth Wrist Radio, all the different podcasts and the website, you know, it does add a lot of value to different people at different times in their collecting. So
yeah, I miss the battles. I think I always think back to Vinny and I with the 36 and 39 mil Explorer.
That was great.
And the three watch battles that we did and, you know, doing them with people like William Asena and a few others that we got that were, you know, pretty high profile, and to hear what they think as well. It was just, yeah, it was a cool time. It was COVID and we were all in lockdown and the world's changed a bit since then. But I think we should try and do at least these gang talks a little bit more because it is a lot of fun. And it makes you think and it gets you a little bit more excited about watches when, you know, there's not a whole lot to be excited about, in my opinion, at the moment.
That and a lot of watch media is really boring.
Yeah, oh, it is. Yeah. Oh,
really boring.
So yeah. Boring.
I think they know it's boring too, but it just has to pay the bills, so they've just got to do it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, anyway.
We tried to liven it up the other night, didn't we, Cherith? We almost had an impromptu podcast.
Time and Tide?
Yeah.
I know.
I was going to say,
wow, some actual podcast is sitting here.
I don't think they would have been very happy with us. But that was a great event, and I'm very thankful for being involved in it. And it's really,
and you know what? Really cool. Credit to him. Running a business for 10 years.
Absolutely.
Successfully and having its own community is... You know,
I'll tell you what, and that is the fact that I could take my girlfriend to an event, right? And that it felt like a normal event, not like a gathering of absolute freaks or geeks.
Yeah.
And that she looked at some of the watches that were on display there, and they are micro brands like Baltic, and she found a couple of watches that she liked for herself or for me. That's pretty awesome.
Was your girlfriend there?
Different night.
Ah,
I kept her away for a minute.
I would have roasted that. Yeah. Like not roasted. Yeah.
I would have roasted.
How about me missing out on the Baltic by one name? That was bullshit.
This is what I'm talking about. Like a normal person comes to that event and goes, I've just got my idea for your 50th birthday present. I'm like, fantastic.
Yeah.
You can't try on a Baltic anywhere else in Australia. So good on them. I agree with you.
Yeah. No.
And finally, thanks for organizing tonight, Anthony.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. We lost a few throughout the day for different reasons, but I'm glad we got together and still did it. So for the one or two listeners still out there, thank you for hanging on this long. We really appreciate it.
It is a short one,
but hopefully we'll be back again soon. I'll try and get this out as quick as possible too. So
yeah, that reminds me, I've got to get that driving time out.
Yes, you do. Hurry up. Stop wasting time. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming. For everyone else, stay on time.